This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast. Whatever voice we all have left, I'm Chris Graham with Scott German. I don't know what to say. Virginia somehow won that freaking basketball game 67-66, down four with less than a second to go. A lot of us had written this game off long before that point, but Virginia somehow gets two free throws from Ty Jerome. He misses the third intentionally. Mamani Diakite called for a lane violation, so Louisville ball under UVA's basket with 0.9 seconds left. Now it's a spot throw-in, so you can't move. Ding Adele moves on the spot throw-in. Virginia gets one last chance. Tony Bennett sets up a play. I think the play was designed for Kyle Guy off a screen. DeAndre Hunter sets the screen, slips out, catches the pass from Ty Jerome, wide open, banks it in for the three, and Virginia wins this game. Scott, we've seen a lot of basketball. I have literally never seen anything like this, and I don't think I'll ever see anything like it again, coming back from down four with less than a second to go to win in regulation.
No, I don't think that's something we can reasonably ever think we'll see again. We looked it up. The best we can see, the win probability at that mark with down four, couldn't get it fine-tuned enough to get it to see what it actually was at 0.9 seconds, but you know it's got to be as close to 100% as you could get. But at 6 seconds left, down 66-62, the Louisville win probability was 95.7%, and we haven't seen that. I think we looked the weight game a few years ago, the miracle in Winston-Salem, the UVA came from way back with under a minute left. That win probability was about 98%. I think we read that game forced the people that did those analytics, did those charts, they had to rewrite the whole formula because UVA kind of screwed that up. But no, I don't see how this is going to ever happen again. I mean, you know, the basketball gods have to be looking down on us, because I just thought of something while I was rambling on about that. You know, if Diakite doesn't get called for the lane violation, we don't win this game tonight.
Right.
Just think about that.
Right. Yeah, I think...
Because that turned it back over to Louisville, right?
Yeah.
Under the basket. So if Diakite gets in there... I mean, the only hope we would have had was to put up to get the rebound and put a stick back up, right?
Yeah. You look at what Louisville did until the last 0.9 seconds. They did everything you're supposed to do to close the game out. It was 58-58 on a pair of Ty Jerome free throws, 1:59 to go. Virginia turns the ball over with a chance to take the lead. Louisville steals the ball, makes a offensive rebound layup. Virginia turns the ball over again. The game goes to a foul shooting contest. Louisville makes 6 of 8. Now, Ryan McMahon missed 2. He was 2 of 4. He's a 90-plus percent foul shooter. Hey, we know about 90-plus percent foul shooters missing shots late, but they still were 6 of 8 in the last 30 seconds. And they're up 4 after the last of that. I think it was Darius Perry hit 2 free throws with 5 seconds to go. It's 66-62 Louisville. Now, so everything that Louisville had done right in the last 30 seconds, in the last 0.9 seconds they do wrong, because, you know, Ty Jerome, he's 30 feet from the basket, gets fouled shooting a 3. If he makes the 3 with 0.9 seconds left, Virginia's still down 1. So there's your first mistake. Then Jerome makes the 2 free throws. He misses the 3rd. Now, we all have, you know, we're forgetting this now, maybe. A lot of us are forgetting this now because of the exciting ending. But Scott points it out. Now, Diakite gets called for the lane violation, but the shot that missed, Louisville was going to rebound that shot. So if they don't call the lane violation, now, if he doesn't commit it, certainly, but if they don't call the lane violation, game's over. Louisville rebounds the ball, game's over. Instead, yeah, it's Louisville ball. They call timeout. And I'll tell you what I'm thinking, Scott. I'm thinking at that time, I'm thinking, you know, Mike Jaminski on the game broadcast was saying, throw the ball as far down the court as you can. If Virginia steals it, they have to shoot a half-court shot with 0.9 seconds left to try to win this game. And I'm thinking, you know, you got to be careful with that, because if you throw it and nobody touches it, Virginia gets the ball back under the basket, and that's the last thing you want if you're Louisville. Now, the referee handing the ball to Dang Liddell is pointing at the floor, and that's the universal signal for it's a spot throw in. You can't run back and forth like you can after a made basket. So, you know, it was very clearly stated to Dang Liddell, you can't move. The first thing Dang Liddell does is he takes three or four or five steps. The entire Virginia bench explodes, signaling the traveling violation. Even all that said, you still got to execute that last play. So Louisville does two very stupid things wrong, and Virginia does what they're supposed to do. They make the free throws, they make the three-pointer, but man, so much had to go right to win this game by 1 point. A game that Virginia, let's be honest, Scott, Virginia didn't deserve to win this game, but they put themselves in a position to, and that's what good teams do.
Hey, Chris, how many times have we commented about Dean Smith, or Dean Smith, boy, it says it where my mind is, Lloyd Williams calling the dogs off, you know, waving the white flag in situations that, in retrospect, was less dire than what Virginia was in tonight. I mean, you play to the end of the buzzer, and that's what they did. They played until the end of the buzzer. And, you know, if this game isn't a textbook for coaches all across the country to point out the reason you play till the end of the buzzer, then I don't know what will. So here's my question, and I'm not pouring salt into the wounds of Louisville, but so if you're Louisville, if you're a Louisville fan wanting to take someone's scholarship away from them, who is the bigger goat right now? The kid that fouled Jerome? 9/10 of a second, was it Ding that ran the baseline?
Yeah, Adele. Adele was the one who ran the baseline.
Adele. Yeah.
Perry.
So which of those two? Which of those two is the bigger of the game tonight on those two plays?
None of this happens if Perry doesn't foul Jerome with less than a second to go on a long three. He's a freshman. He was in the game. He was in the game to shoot free throws. A 90% foul shooter, he made both free throws. So that's why he's in the game. You know, Louisville knows that Virginia needs to foul. When he came in the game, it was a two-point game. And so David Padgett puts him in the game to make the free throws. He made the free throws. But, yeah, just let Jerome shoot a three. If Jerome doesn't get fouled on that three, even if he makes the three. And, of course, he could have made the three and gotten fouled, too. I mean, you know, anything could have happened there, too. So, you know, Adele just had a little bit of a brain fart. I mean, but that doesn't happen if Perry doesn't do what he does. And, you know, Adele had a big game, too. Now, you look at the stats, he had 18 points, 5 of 16, but, you know, the 5 of 16 being what it was, he put the ball in the hole, he played 38 minutes, he played his heart out. I feel for that kid on senior night. Louisville, you know, they may have played their way out of the tournament. You beat Virginia at home. Louisville being right on that bubble, you know, you probably punch your ticket kind of like Virginia Tech did the other night against Duke. You know, you lose this game in that way. You know, and I'll say this to be honest too. I haven't analyzed that last play well enough. I watched what Virginia was doing on the inbounds play, Jerome inbounding. I was watching. I think Hall ran through first. What they basically did was they set up a play. We've seen Virginia run an awful lot in these situations late in games. You use a screener and you run multiple guys off that screen. You're not really looking for the first guy. It was Hall coming off. You're looking for the second guy. In this case, it was Guy coming off second. You're hoping that they react so much to the first guy that the second guy's freed up. Now, in this case, both those guys, you know, they covered both those guys. So it ended up being the slip of DeAndre Hunter. It just happens. Hey, if you've got a four setting screens who can also make threes, and on the night, that was Hunter's second three. He made a big one earlier in the game. They cut the lead from 10-7 back when Virginia seemed way out of it. But so I don't know who in Louisville, you know, missed that assignment. But you know, I think as much as anything, I mean, I know we're talking about you know, Virginia with that big rally in the last second of the game. But they could have quit a lot of different times in this game, Scott. Down 13 in the first half, down 13 again in the second half, down 10 as late as 4 minutes to go. This, a lot of lesser teams would have given up a long time before that last minute. And this Virginia team instead, you know, they They battled, they fought, they didn't shoot the ball well, they didn't play defense well, but they hung around, and they won this game.
Yeah, you're right. I'm just amazed. Now, while you were talking, I was looking at some stats, and I did find here's what we were looking for. With 1 second left in the game, the win probability for Louisville was 99.7. So, for the second time in history, Virginia has defeated Mass.
Yeah, because we'll have to talk about that first time just to for Virginia fans. I'm sure you will remember this, Virginia fans listening to this podcast tonight. The Wake Forest game in 2016, Virginia was down in that game 10 points with a minute to go. It was still a 7-point game with 17 seconds left. Wake Forest had the ball. Virginia stole the ball. I think Mario Shaq hit a three. Wake missed a couple free throws. Virginia hit another three. Wake missed a couple more free throws, and Virginia hit a three at the buzzer. Darius Thompson banked it in from the Scott. It's kind of eerie. From the same side of the court, he banked it in. Darius Thompson banked it in just like Hunter did to win that game. Wake had a 100% chance of winning that game. They redid the model, so at least they don't have to redo it this time. 99.7% chances Virginia still had that sliver of a chance. And I tell you what, Scott, I've watched – not only have I watched the replay of the game-winning shot to see what Hunter did and see how they ran the play, but I also watched it a couple times to see Tony Bennett's reaction, and here's how I described it to my wife. He looked like a guy who just won the lottery with somebody else's ticket. Tony had the biggest smile on his face I've ever seen Tony Bennett have in 10 years at Virginia. He knew he escaped with one, and I think we all feel the same way, but the look on Tony's face was classic. Never seen it before.
No, that was Tony's got a great smile, but that was the best of the best. I was just in a state of shock. I still am because there's no rational explanation of how we won that game. Now, you know, a little earlier I said this is a lesson that you learn, that you play the game 100%. You play the game to the end. You play the game to the end, to the final buzzer. But having said all that, even though we did play the game to the final buzzer, there's some luck involved. And the luck, I think, is that you got to be lucky that your opponent just goes brain dead and makes those two bonehead plays. I mean, these are major college teams, 4- and 5-star recruits, supposedly top echelon coaching. How do you? That has to be. That just does not happen. That might happen in a high school game. That might even happen in a low division NCAA game. But that should not happen in an ACC game. That's just, you got to be lucky that you're the beneficiary of some just absolutely brain dead plays like that. Two of them in the last 9/10 of a second. I mean, I can't explain it any other way. There's luck involved in that.
Well, but and like I said earlier, though, I think you got to give credit to Virginia in one respect for creating the luck. You talk about how can we explain how they even got in this position. Louisville in the last 10:09 went 2 of 12 from the field. They were 17 of 34 shooting 50% as of the 10-minute mark of the second half. Only 2 of 12 in the last 10 minutes. Also in the last 10 minutes. Actually, in the last 13 minutes, Virginia 12 of 19 from the floor. So a Virginia team that couldn't throw it in the ocean for much of this game. At one point in this game, shooting 12 of 37 from the floor. That's less than 33%. It's about 32-point-something percent. Finishes the game on a 12 for 19 stretch. So, you give credit for it. And during the game, Scott and I were texting each other, but I'm also tweeting. I'm covering the game on a live blog. And among the things I blogged about was when the game was, for the longest time in the second half, Louisville kept a 10-point lead. Virginia had a stretch. I think Scott noted it to me in a text. Virginia was 6 of 7 from the floor during one of those stretches and still was down 10 points, because they couldn't get a stop. Yep. And but you just keep grinding. And what you do, I wrote on a tweet at about the 12-minute mark, some nights it just doesn't go your way. And this feels like a night where it's not going our way and it's not going to go our way, but this proves your mettle. If you stay in the game, even if you lose, just stay around, just hang in there, keep playing, keep efforting. And this Virginia team did that to create that opportunity in the last second, literally. Ty Jerome. I was going to talk about Ty Jerome. You know, in the first half, Ty Jerome, let's look at his numbers here real quick. Ty Jerome, just 3 points, 1 of 4 shooting. He has 18 points in the second half. For the longest time, Jerome and Guy and Hall, even Hunter. Hunter finished with 7 points, but he had 2 big threes, including the last one. You know, those guys weren't producing at all. Guy and Jerome end up with 10 points each. Hunter ends up with a 7. So the guys that, you know, for the longest time in this game weren't producing, the guys you expect to produce, when crunch time came, they produced. That's how you pull a rabbit out of a hat. You just hang in there, and you then seize opportunities, I guess.
Yeah, you're right. Then that's why. Because if Virginia quits, Tony calls off the dogs, waves the white flag, whatever you want to say, then Louisville has no opportunity to go brain dead and make those plays. If we just give up. But yeah, we didn't. We kept battling, and when you keep battling like that, good things happen. And maybe, you know, one game in 1,000, something like that'll happen. But you're right. We played ourselves in a position to capitalize on something just absolutely amazing to think that could happen. Two plays in the last 9/10 of a second. Here's another thing that I lamented about during the game. Of course, we're Cavalier fans, so remember, we'll always find the dark clouds out there. I thought the announcing was horrible. Was that Tim Brando announcing, or was that Marlon Brando? I mean, he misspoke all sorts of, all during the game on multiple different occasions. Now, the Diakite Lane violation, if you look at that, and I'm watching it again, uh-huh, I'm not sure that was on Diakite.
Well, in the scorebook, it was on Diakite. But I would agree, the only person that was even close to being in a lane early was Diakite. I remember thinking, you know, out loud, while it was happening, well, that's a kind of chintzy call. That's not much of a lane violation. I mean, he's barely...
I believe if you look at that closer, I think it might have been on Kyle Guy.
Okay. Well, I'll say
I'm going to look at it a little closer. I've got it on tape here, but I believe it was Brando misspoke. You said the scorebook did show a lane violation. It did record it as a lane violation on Diakite.
It does. The official stats broadcast listed on Diakite, but I will say this. Again, I was watching the stats broadcast also during the game live, and it originally went up as a turnover by Guy. They changed it in the scorebook to Diakite, but it did originally go up as Guy. So that's interesting that you say that when you watch the replay again, that it looked like to you that it was Guy, because originally it was in the scorebook as Guy, but they did eventually change it to Diakite for some reason.
I'm not sure. I will watch it again. But Brando also commented he thought that the Louisville player was instructed to foul Jerome. And I'm sitting there had pretty much conceded the game at that point and was looking for anything to rip the flesh off of, and I was like, you got to be kidding me. Why would anyone tell him to foul the shooter when you're up by 4 points?
Yeah, you know,
sense.
Talking about how poor the announcing was tonight, you know, yeah, I'll give Brando an out, not much of one. I'm a fellow announcer. I don't do basketball, but I do baseball and football. And, you know, you noticed it early. He said early in the game that he hadn't done any UVA this year. But that doesn't excuse calling Mamadi Diakite by the wrong name several times early in the game. You know, you do your homework. I mean, I do a lot of baseball. I do a lot of football in the fall. You look up the names. They give you a pronunciation guide. I mean, you know, and that's a simple thing. And then the bigger things are, again, like you say, I wouldn't fault him for saying, you know, for attributing the lane violation to Diakite. The scorebook does that. But yeah, you know, to intimate that there's anything about instructing a foul, what that indicates is he doesn't know what the score is. It was a 4-point game, not a 3-point game.
I will give Jaminski credit that he did say he adamantly disagreed with Brando, saying that no way was that ordered to foul. I mean, doesn't take a basketball genius to understand it. You know, we didn't talk much about the stats, but boy, what a second half! What a second half of the second half that Ty Jerome played. Man, just incredible.
Well, yeah, you know, I talked about 18 points in the second half. I'll pull his individual stats up here real quick. Let's see, a three-pointer with 10 minutes to go, and then a jumper, and then another layup at 7 points, another layup for 9, and then free throws for 11, 12, 13, 16 of those points in the last 10 minutes. So, a guy that had 5 points with 10 minutes to go. And, you know, looking at the message boards, even our communication back and forth, I mean, he had been having a terrible game. Guy had been having a terrible game. You know, Guy still finished with just 10 points on 4 of 13 shooting, but he had a couple of nice drives to the basket in that last 10 minutes to create some things. Hunter only had... You know, he only had 1 point until 4 minutes to go. Down 10 when the life seemed to be out of Virginia. You know, it was only a 10-point game, but it just seemed like there was nothing left in Virginia. Hit that three with 4:14 to go. That got the pulse going again, you know, just little things like that. And defense. Again, Louisville only makes two field goals in the last 10-plus minutes. You know, it's I wondered if perhaps they were trying to bleed the clock too much. You know, they got out of their offense a little bit, but I think also there was a bit of Virginia taking them out of their offense. But, I wonder if Louisville was just trying to, I don't know, just trying to milk it for what they could and kind of got away from what they were doing well. They were really attacking in that first 30 minutes, not so much in the last 10. I think they were trying, it was kind of like a football team trying to run the clock out. You can't do that in basketball. There's a shot clock. So, Louisville certainly played into Virginia's hands that way.
Yeah, I agree. I believe Louisville was playing not to lose in those final 8 to 10 minutes, and they kind of backed off. They didn't attack that much, and Virginia capitalized. But I'm looking at the stats. Virginia out-rebounded Louisville 34-27. Free throws ended up still pretty, you know, pretty big difference. Louisville was 22-29 from the free throw line. Virginia shot 13 and 19, but at one point it was a little even more of a disparity than that. So it kind of evened up a little bit as the game wore. But
well, to be fair, Louisville did shoot 8 in the last 30 seconds when Virginia was trying to foul them to get clock. So that's a little bit of a disparity. But it's second half. Louisville shot 20. Now 12 of those were in game action. There was a time there when Louisville only scored from the foul line, and that was a little frustrating to see. Louisville was getting to the foul line on some clever calls, I would say. You even the fan and Scott, you know, we're analysts too, but the fan was saying, you know, this win would mean more to Louisville than it would to Virginia. Hint, hint. So there was it did feel a little bit like that. Yeah, it felt like that a little bit for a stretch of the second half. Yeah, I won't disagree with you.
Just look, the ACC, if they're going to get they want as many teams as they can in NCAA, Louisville on the bubble. Louisville wins this game tonight, they are off the bubble.
Yeah.
A Virginia win really doesn't do anything. Virginia's not, you know, they're not, they're pretty solid right now, regardless of what happens to them the rest of the season. So from a standpoint of what benefited the ACC more, it would have been a Louisville victory tonight. And, you know, I'm sitting there looking at the stats early on, Louisville way ahead in free throw attempts, and it just, you know, didn't play out that way, but it looked like that if you were leaning towards believing that, it certainly looked like that was the way it was unfolding.
Yeah, as of, I'm looking at it right now, I got to pause this real quick because once again my computer is acting up. As of right now, and this seems to be updated, let me look at Joe Lunardi's bracketology is updated tonight, so it doesn't give a time, but it's updated tonight. He's got Louisville now down on his last four in line. So That's as close as I've seen Louisville. They had been a last four buys. Last four in means you're playing in that first four as a team. So they're there with Providence, USC, and Texas. Lunardi right now has Syracuse in his among his first four out. He's got UCLA, Syracuse, Nebraska, Washington among his first four out. And then the next four out, he's got Mississippi State, Utah, Marquette, and Notre Dame. So right now, Lunardi has nine ACC teams. Syracuse losing last night the way they did, not just losing, but losing the way they did last night. I'm not even sure if they're first four out. I think they're second four out, maybe even below Notre Dame. I would put Notre Dame right now ahead of Syracuse in terms of placement in the NCAA tournament. Of course, that's the team we see next. Not to think too far ahead because we want to revel in this a little bit more, but you know, Notre Dame comes in. Bonzi Colson had a pretty good game last night. Scott, we talked about this yesterday. We thought he'd play 15, 20 minutes, not do much. He almost had a double-double last night. So we're going to get a good shot from Notre Dame here in less than 48 hours. Another team that is as desperate as Louisville. Louisville played with desperation and played well with desperation for 39 minutes and 59.1 seconds tonight. We'll see a similar effort out of Notre Dame, I'm sure, on Saturday.
Oh, yeah. You know, again, Louisville and Notre Dame both need wins. And, you know, Notre Dame's going to be coming in.
Colson.
My mind's gone blank.
Bonzi Colson.
Yes, he's going to be a little more, probably a little more ready to play. He got some playing minutes the other night in their win. But you know what? I can't think about Notre Dame right now. just replaying a lot of things in my mind. What's the possibility? And I know that you're going to, you know, if you think I'm crazy, go ahead and say it, because I've been called worse. What's the possibility that Tony ordered a lane violation?
Oh, I can't imagine. You know, now I'm thinking ahead. I wonder if there might be teams that do that in the future. Of course, the solution to that is.
You see where I'm going with that?
Well, the solution to that in the future is just throw the ball in bounds off somebody's foot. I mean, the clock will run out. But no, I cannot imagine that that's the case. Tony's a smart guy, but too much has to happen. That's why we say.
But when you get in that situation, you almost throw caution to the wind. I know he didn't, but I'm saying you can follow my thought.
Oh no, that's the only way Virginia wins the game. That's the only way Virginia has a chance to win the game is because Ding Liddell travels with the ball. Yeah, you're right.
And if that does come out that he did, then. You don't wait any longer. You put him in the Hall of Fame right now.
Yeah, but I'll say Louisville had a chance now, and this isn't a coaching issue. This is just a kid being excited issue because I don't know if there was formally a timeout between that, but there was such a delay because of the lane violation. There was enough of a delay for Padgett to you have to think Ding Liddell's his inbounder. I mean, because Virginia went to Ty Jerome when they had the ball back. You know, you use your best inbounder there. I think Louisville did have a timeout because there was a long delay in there. And so, I mean.
Well, he rallied his teams around him. So there was time, you know, both teams had opportunities.
I'm sure. So that tells me, without having seen it, that tells me that Padgett had to draw something up. And, you know, I mean.
They did have a timeout. Louisville had a timeout left.
Okay. So. Whether it was a formal timeout or not, he had time to pick his inbounder, and I can't imagine that coaches don't remind you that some among all those assistants standing there in suits that somebody's not there saying, "Hey, it's a spot throw in." Hell, the referee stood there and pointed to the floor before he handed the ball. So that's just a thing where, I mean, that's a one in a million thing where a veteran guy like Adele, I think he's a senior. I mean, he's a veteran guy for that team. You know, he just had a brain fart, and you know, perfect storm. I mean, that's literally a perfect storm. You get fouled with 0.9 seconds to go. You make two of three. You get a lane violation. They walk on the inbounds. There, not many people outside of basketball nerds like us even know that that's a violation. Walking when you throw the ball inbounds, you can get called for traveling inbounds. So, you know. It happened. That's all we can say. It will never happen again. That what we saw tonight will never happen again. And Scott, there's one other thing that will never happen again. Tell me what that is.
Well, we said, I teased everyone in the last podcast that I can guarantee you that no ACC team will ever go 9-0 in regular season play. And I stand by that. We just did it, and it'll never happen again. And the reason it'll never happen again is that next year the ACC goes to a 20-game regular season schedule. So it's impossible to go 9-0. You can go 10-0, but no one will ever go 9-0.
I'm seeing it. Yeah, yeah. So I'm seeing it in 2019, 2020, but it looks like they moved it up a year. So yeah, Duke, I think, went 16-0 back in the mid-2000s. They were 8-0 on the road. Virginia first to go 9-0 on the road, and the only to go 9-0 on the road. And, you know, even mentioning that the only other undefeated team on the road, at least in recent memory, was a Duke team, tells you where this Virginia program is. Virginia is 16-1 in the ACC. That ties the record for wins in a regular season held by Virginia and Duke. The team in 2013-2014 for Virginia was 16-2. So these are rarefied air kind of days for Virginia basketball fans like us, like all you folks listening out there. Three regular season titles in 5 years. We've lapped the field. I mean, Virginia is 16-1. Duke is 12-5. Carolina is 11-6. They're playing on Saturday night before that big national TV audience, and it's for second place in the ACC, and second place by 4 or 5 games in the ACC. So these are some interesting days to be a Virginia basketball fan. That's all I can say.
Well, it's fun. It's fun. And I would hate to look, or I would hate to not have a ticket for the game Saturday. At JPJ, because I have a feeling the secondary market, just about the time that ball was banked in, that secondary market ticket prices for the Notre Dame game took a significant spike up.
Well, and something else that will take a spike up tomorrow is people calling in to work, because like Scott, I will have difficulty, and I'm sure like a lot of you folks out there, it's going to be hard to get to sleep tonight. We're finishing this podcast up. It's around 11:15 Thursday night. It's going to be real hard. And Scott, you have to get up early in the morning, so like you said, you might just stay up all night and go to work. I mean, it's going to be hard to not watch that play over and over and over and over, because this is a gimme. I mean, we were already number one in the country, already had everything sewn up. This is just special because it came out of nowhere. And, you know, I'm getting ready to watch SportsCenter. I'm sure like a lot of you folks are, and I can't wait to relive this about 100 more times.
Yep, and if tomorrow's a sick day for a lot of people, we understand. Can't be for me, but I'll make it through. You know, one last thing to close. The pass that, and I want to watch this again, but that was a tremendous inbounds pass from Kai to Hunter. I mean, how that ball was like thread the needle.
Well, and with 0.9 seconds left, you can't fumble the ball. I mean, you got to catch it and shoot it, so it's got to be right on. And, of course, Hunter does a great
job. Everything has to be perfect.
It's got to be, yeah, everything with 0.9 seconds, yeah, with less than a second to go. I mean, you have a little bit of room, but you can't fumble the ball and shoot it. He caught it in rhythm. I mean, you don't call bank on a shot like that, but certainly he gave him a clean look. It's a special night. Somehow, we're finishing up this podcast 30 minutes plus in, and I've still got voice left. I won't have much left, so we'll go ahead and probably wrap things up here. But Scott and I, thank you for listening. I'm sure we're all going to revel in this for a little while. Final score once again, Virginia 67, Louisville 66. For Scott German, I'm Chris Graham signing off. Wahoo, wah.